Good morning, everyone.
Welcome to the Smashing Business Show.
I'm Wert Ahmed.
And I'm Abdul Majid Awan.
And today we have some really interesting topics for you guys. Coming up is the U.S. election.
Yeah.
We have big, big news for you guys today. For the first time in history, Bitcoin has hit $75,000. Now, this is absolutely historic. It's never done this before. And many are predicting that this is due to Trump leading the race.
Yeah, and Trump has like 240 electoral votes in his favor right now. The live ticker that I'm seeing everywhere. So right now, he has 240. Kamala Harris, the Democrats candidate, 210. So it's just a very close race right now. Everyone was calling it a coin toss. We don't know who will win. But right now, it's Trump taking the lead, and he's a very pro-crypto person because of Elon Musk's involvement in his campaign. Mm. So let's see. It's a coin toss still right now, to be honest. We don't know what will happen.
But other than that, what I really see is, you know, he's gone from bullets to Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Think about it like that. Like a bullet almost, you know, went through this man, but it ended up grazing his ear. And now he's almost going to win his second presidential election.
Yeah.
I think this is really going to make him like a prophetic figure, especially in the business world.
And there have been like other figures who've risen to this level. Obama won twice, Bush won twice, Bush Jr. But yeah, with Trump, he has this X factor about him, I guess.
He does.
He's just a different personality that we've seen in the past decade in the US like presidential race. Usually we have a very set figure who's there, who has a perfect tie, a perfect coat, the perfect words. But in the last 10, 15 years, the US presidential race, the dynamics have changed. People want more mercurial personalities, more interesting personalities. They just don't want like a canvas which is the perfect candidate. They want someone who has a personality of their own, not the U.S. presidential personality.
And you know, Majid, in 2016, when Trump actually won, what made him appeal to so many of the masses in the U.S. and the world, he has this almost like anti-establishment rhetoric. I remember, I believe he said, you know, he had this promise that he would drain the swamp in 2016. Yeah. And the reason why it really links to Bitcoin increasing is because of the fact that in Bitcoin, it's not government-controlled money. Yeah. And it's the fact that Trump, him supporting money that is not government-controlled, that's what makes him appeal to so many people.
Yeah.
And that's what's making Bitcoin go up too.
Bitcoin is very volatile. Him winning, Bitcoin going up. We will see some correction, to be honest. Bitcoin is not going... I think it may hit an 80,000 mark as well if he wins, like if the win is announced. Again, coming back to his supporters, Elon Musk, it's a big contribution from him, be it coming to the rallies, be it giving $1 million to the Pennsylvania people, one of the biggest swing states. So yeah, that is causing a lot of change in Bitcoin. Business-wise also... we talked about it yesterday. He's going to impose a lot of taxes and tariffs. He says that whoever wants to come to US, wants to do business here, he has to pay more taxes than what is normal right now. He's also trying to like figure out a 10% tax, at least levy tax on everything. So I think he's good for people who are into stocks right now, because dollar will consolidate, dollar will become better, dollar will become stronger. The only problem that I see is it will give rise to inflation. Because if there's more tariffs on stuff coming into the US, US cannot produce everything in the world. They obviously import. Every country imports something, right? UAE imports a lot of American products. So things coming from America to the UAE will become expensive. So American products that you use in the UAE will become expensive
That's
with Trump
true.
Coming. And UAE exports the things that we send to those markets, the American market. If there is more tariff, we will obviously, our products will become expensive and the demand will go down. And we've already seen in the US, you've seen all the big brands complaining about their sales going down. Yesterday, KFC and Yum Foods, basically, the brand which holds Pizza Hut, KFC, all these big brands. Then Burger King also, one of the competitors of KFC. We talked about McDonald's. all these have shown bad profits. Actually, not profits. They've shown loss in this quarter.
Yeah.
In the last quarter that we spent Q3 2024. All of them are in loss. Obviously, boycotts are doing a lot of it also from this Middle Eastern and Muslim majority areas. But in the US, people are not able to afford it.
Yeah.
So it's a question of affordability right now. So if Trump, whatever he's saying, he will do, if he does that, inflation will go up.
Look, perhaps it's a definite question of affordability in the yeah. US, but for us yeah. in the Middle East, digital assets have become everything.
Yeah.
Crypto has become everything in the Middle East. And not just that, like the impact of Trump himself in the Middle East, it's extremely far reaching. It doesn't just come in digital assets and crypto. If you guys have seen, he has Trump Towers, I believe, yeah. in Dubai, Saudi Arabia, and Oman set to open.
Yeah.
And also the golf course that he has with Damac. His influence, it's truly everywhere.
Yeah.
Him as a president, the empire that he has built, its financial wings are almost all over the world.
Yeah. Trump is a big figure. He's not just like any person who just came through the ranks of politics, like Obama. Obama came through the ranks of politics. He became a senator, then he studied at universities. Trump comes from a business background. I remember his quote very clearly. My father put me out of the house and gave me $1 million and said, go make a life for yourself. It was supposed to be a motivational speech from him, but I think if my father gives me $1 million, I'll be very happy to take it and start something. But yeah, he built a billion-dollar empire over it. That's the good part. That's Trump's contribution. But yeah, he has business interests everywhere in the world because of Trump Tower and the whole Trump empire. He also has a social media, Truth Socials. So he has everything that he needs to earn money. Right now, it's all about the power that he wants. Everyone who has enough money or enough control in terms of monetary control, they go forward and they try to become something more. And politics gives you that power. So yeah, I think that's enough on politics.
No, but
let's
you
move
know, there
on.
Was there was yeah. something actually really interesting of people responding to the rise in Bitcoin on Twitter.
Yeah.
Someone said, Yezen, if Bitcoin breaks $79,420 by tonight at 9 p.m., I will give 10 lucky followers who like and retweet this one whole Bitcoin, a Model S plaid, all expense paid trip to Dubai, including first class airfare and five-star hotel, and private jet card with $250 value.
Nice. That's a lot.
That's
oh,
a
yeah,
lot.
Oh, yeah, it includes the Dubai trip also. So, yeah, try to come. yeah, a lot of people will say a lot of interesting things on X. Elon Musk is already tweeting a lot about the election. So we'll see sooner or later, as soon as the results are announced, Trump or Kamala, whoever wins. Right now, Trump has gone up more. I just saw he went up to 247 as compared to Kamala Harris's 210 electoral votes. So whoever wins, we'll have to see what it will hold for the Middle Eastern economy. We have a war going on. I won't call it a war. It's a genocide by Israel in Gaza and an invasion by Israel in Lebanon. But Western media loves to call it a war. There is no war happening. It's a genocide and an invasion. So that we need to see whoever is in support of ending it. Kamala yesterday said that she will come and finish this war. Maybe she was just making a last appeal to the Muslim
Americans.
Yeah,
because Americans. She was there for 4 years.
Yeah, so just the only thing that I care about right now in regards to election, what will happen to the economy? I said taxes and tariffs are things that go to the US, the prices will increase, so demand will fall and industries will suffer here. Our local products which go there suffer, and also stuff that comes from there to here, that will suffer. We'll have like more prices over it, inflation here on American products. So just let's see who wins, and we'll then discuss what is happening because of their economic policies. So yeah, that happened, right? Good discussion, I guess, on politics and the economic sides of the US election. Apart from that, coming back to the region, ADNOC, Mustr, and Microsoft have teamed up to drive AI and low carbon innovations. It's a strategic collaboration agreement that they've signed at IDPEC, which is into day three today.
Yeah.
And EDIPEC, again, one of the biggest energy conferences in the world right now. Mainly what I've seen is it's very funny. A lot of signings that happened at EDIPEC are led by ADNOC. So it looks like more like an ADNOC event right now. But yeah, this is happening. And one of the important things that will happen under the strategic collaboration agreement is that Microsoft is setting up two data centers. They've announced two. They will obviously set up a lot more in Abu Dhabi. And we've seen over the years that data centers need a lot of energy.
Yeah.
That's one of the biggest discussion points at EDIPEC right now in Abu Dhabi, that how do you produce so much energy for these data centers, which helped all the AI change, all the AI revolution that is happening in the world.
Yeah.
So,
but more than that, we're really seeing that Microsoft here, it's trying to get its hands everywhere, because recently they had a partnership with G42, the largest artificial intelligence company in the UAE, and it's led by Sheikh Thanoun. He's also a very famous commentator on X. And if you really think about it, like, why are they doing this? They're doing this because they see the importance of digital assets that are spreading in the UAE, that are spreading in the Middle East right now.
Mainly data centers right now, and AI, obviously, you're talking about digital assets. AI is a part of that. AI is a part of everything right now. So to support the extensive network that is AI, that AI needs, you need data centers. And this partnership shows that this region is becoming a hub for data centers. One of the biggest reasons, we talked about it before the show as well, energy. You need energy to run these mega, giant, big data centers. And if you don't have that kind of energy or cheap energy, they can become very expensive. So the whole infrastructure that supports AI, if that is expensive, eventually AI will become expensive also. So the products coming out of AI will become expensive. ChatGPT will become expensive. That's the biggest concern for everyone.
But much more than that, this entire project over here, it's really important for the UAE, because they are trying to reach a net zero 2045 goal. And to do that, they basically need to have near zero methane emissions by 2030. And sustainability, it is so important. It's really so important. I always say this, but all the businesses that are being built, everything that's being built right now, all that progress will go into nothing if we do not try to combat climate change.
Sustainability is, again, one of the biggest things. We'll have to see. Last year was the year of sustainability because COP28 was happening in the UAE. This year, they extended it to this year. Let's see what happens for the next year, what plans UAE has for the next year in regards to sustainability. They will obviously come up with some policy or some kind of initiative.
I did read something where the UAE did express that they have a plan to have a business fund for climate change. But the issue with setting up the entire fund is that not all countries, I believe, have the funds to set it up right now. And they still need to take a lot of factors into consideration. But the hope is that it will be settled in COP29 soon. It will come together.
The main idea, I remember, what happened at COP28, the UAE consensus. The main idea was that the developed countries which have more industrialization, they have more industries, more greenhouse emissions, they will contribute 80% of the money to that fund. The 20% will come from here and there, obviously. But the fund, yes, you're talking about, is very important, because a lot of countries, you must have seen in Sudan, your country, or the sub-Saharan Africa, there's a lot of scarcity of water. In our region, in Asia, there's a lot of water, so there's always flooding happening. There's no infrastructure for dams. In Pakistan, every year I see torrential rains cause a problem in the Sindh province, in other provinces. India is currently facing flood problems.
And remember the extreme rain last year?
It has somehow come here as well. The extreme things that happen due to bad weather or the weather pattern changes. So all these things, obviously UAE is a developed country. They have a whole good economy. The GDP is great. But for the underdeveloped countries, which don't have that kind of money to put in an infrastructure to avoid flooding or to tackle the scarcity of water, like Africa, sub-Saharan Africa, this fund will help them. So it was like taking money from the people who are causing all of this and then giving it to the people who can't afford to build an infrastructure.
But aid doesn't work, Majid. Foreign aid does not work.
It's what I saw was that the fund will be used to make projects, not like just given to the government and be like, okay, use it. They'll be monitored by the COP. Obviously, COP comes under UN committee. So UN will monitor all the things that are happening when they give the money. So there will be a watchdog over all this budget. So that's the good part, that directly or indirectly, someone will be looking at the funds and how they are used.
But so, you know, Majid, these watchdogs, it doesn't often work. Even when the UN sends people to, you know, make sure that they're watching over everything, it doesn't work. Like, for example, there was this case, I believe it was between 2018 to 2020. It was in Congo. And what essentially happened is that they lost about $6 million that was meant to be given to people who are displaced due to like war conflicts there. And a lot of aid officials were actually involved, and the UN like was able to discover it. But the entire project, everything put in place, the UN was involved, and this still happened. So I don't believe aid works.
See, you need honesty from the rulers of the countries as well. To an extent, you need that also. So if the funds are coming in for some dam, use it for the dam. So that is
though.
One factor that we have to bring in, the government or the government policies or the whole government structure in any underdeveloped countries. We've seen over the years, it's a very long known expert like backed claim that underdeveloped countries mostly have corruption in their whole system.
Yeah.
So because of that, the funds, even whatever they receive, are not used. When you talked about this, it reminded me of a recent article on TRT World. So World Bank gave billions and billions to people. So I'll just read it out so it's better. So there's no record of up to $41 billion. $41 billion have disappeared literally. And
that
they were given
tragic.
By World Bank to vulnerable countries as part of the global battle against climate crisis. So this report was published by Oxfam, and $41 billion literally have disappeared from the system. There is no accounting for where it went, what happened to it. So your point is right, that you can make a fund, you can give money to people, you can build projects for them, but at the end of the day, it's the will of the government, it's the will of the people who control the country, that how those funds are being used. Will they be misused or will they be used
in
a good thing?
I definitely think that, you know, the political ideology of the governments in place, they have a role to play, whether there's corruption, you know, good governance just in general. But aid in itself, it disrupts local economies. Like, for example, Majid, there was this case in Tanzania, I believe it was around the 2000s, where a bunch of celebrities, they came together and they just loved this idea of providing like nets to protect against malaria to people in Tanzania. Seems like a great idea, right? Yeah, but you're going to see how it was when it was actually put into practice. What essentially happened is, yes, they, you know, they gave out all these nets to protect people from malaria, but you know what happened? These nets, they were taken, they were sold in the black market. Some of these nets, in fact, they were used as wedding veils by people. Imagine, they were used as wedding veils and fishing nets.
Yeah.
And what it did basically is for the people who are actually selling nets in Tanzania, like people from the local economy who are selling them, for people, it basically disrupted their business. People didn't buy from them anymore. Instead, they went and got them for cheaper prices, or they didn't get them at all. So do you see what I'm saying? By them actually giving in that aid, what it does is to the markets that already exist, it disrupts business for them. And then that's why they go into this constant cycle of there being no development.
I'll give you a very personal example again. In Pakistan, I saw it in front of my eyes. The 2008 and 2010 earthquakes in Pakistan in the northern regions, they were like 8 Richter scale. They were like one of the biggest earthquakes that hit that region, not even Pakistan, a lot of neighboring countries as well. There was a lot of destructions, a lot of NGOs came, they brought a lot of aid, Vaseline, because it was winter, so Vaselines, everything, tents, because obviously people couldn't live inside every day, they were like shaking, there were after effects of the earthquake, tremors every day. So they put tents, like good quality tents. I remember watching one of those tents on the rooftop of one of the people I know in the region. I was like, why do you have this here, like on your rooftop? You have a big home. This was after like 1 year after the whole thing happened. Mm. And they were like, oh, we just got it in aid. I was like, what about the people who actually needed it?
Exactly.
You've taken it and put it up on your rooftop and you're enjoying it like you're doing a picnic in it. Well, it was supposed to go to a person who lost his home and he would like take refuge in this. And then I saw like a whole room full of Vaseline in one of another person's house. Oh, this came in aid, so we stored it. I was like, this all should go to the people who actually needed it.
Yeah.
So yeah, this happens at the very micro level. This always happens, but I don't know what the solution is, to be honest. The only solution that I see is the will of the leadership.
Mm.
You have good will of the leadership. AIDS do work. It has worked in a lot of countries, in a lot of regions. But I think it should be given in the form of projects, not in the form of money. Just don't transfer the money and be like, okay, we gave you the money, do whatever you want. One example of sport I can give you, again, very closely monitored. Pakistan, every football federation in the world, even the smallest ones, they get some money from FIFA. So Pakistan got nearly, in dollar terms, $1.2 million. It's a lot of money in Pakistan for the development of 10 projects, 10 stadiums actually.
Mm.
Not even one stadium is there and all the money has disappeared. So yeah, this happens. It's it's not like something alien, but again, coming back to the will of the people, the will of the underdeveloped countries, the will of the leadership of the underdeveloped countries, that can change a country in a day.
I agree.
You see the will
you.
Of the UAE 10, 20 years ago. You look at this, we have so many pictures on online portals everywhere. You see the way 20 years ago, you see the way today. The will of the leadership here is that we have to make everything perfect for the people of the UAE.
And we have to be self-sufficient and not rely
on
external countries. Yeah.
And you see today, they know that if they travel on a road, they want a good road. The people also want a good road. So whatever they build, they also travel on the same roads, right? They travel without security. I love this about the UAE leadership. They'll just go and mingle with people right in the center of a mall or anything. They don't have any fear. Why? Because they have a good will. They want to work for the people of the country. They have worked for the people of the country. People of the country love them. They just love seeing them. Go to underdeveloped countries and look at the security details of the leadership. So if they're doing something wrong, that means they're scared and they'll have like 15 cars in front of them following them. You must have seen that. So the will of the leadership is the most important thing in any country's economic transformation.
Then,
I'm not even talking about political, educational. You become good with economic transformation, everything will fall in place.
Exactly. It's all about economic transformation because a government, they can have really good will, but if their will is not specifically directed at the economy, it doesn't have a it doesn't have a capitalistic approach, it will not succeed. Like, for example, I saw this case study in Ghana, and what I essentially read that between 2001 and 2008, they had a different leader, and during specifically within that time window, it's actually when their economy was booming. And that was because their leader at that time, his name was John Kafur, he actually had a very capitalistic ideology. And because he had that capitalistic will, as you'd like to say, Majid, because he had that, what he did was that the money that their government was given at that time, he actually directed it at key infrastructure projects, like, for example, at roads, electricity, and water supplies. But then later on,
those are the basic needs, right?
Yeah, but then later on, between 2009 and 2016, when the power shifted in Ghana, and then they had socialist leaders at that time, and what they did was that because they were socialists, they actually took the money that was given to them, and instead they actually directed it into education, healthcare, and poverty alleviation programs. And while that's great, that's very helpful. You know, poverty, it's almost a cycle. And the only way that it can be broken is if the economy is improved.
Yeah.
That's really what I do believe in.
Yeah. So, yeah, focus on making the economy better. Everything will fall in place. You have money, you can make a good health sector. You have money, you can make a good education sector. You have money, you can literally do anything in this world right now. You can buy resources. You can bring the best teachers teach in your schools. You can get the best doctors to come and work for you. So yeah, money runs the world, to be honest, right now.
It does, but yeah. Just on the topic of aid, on the topic of aid, I do believe it makes the poor poorer.
Yeah,
I really do.
Always, main thing is just give. Like the same fish example. Don't give them the fish. Teach them how to fish.
Exactly.
And you will eventually have a good economy, and people will eventually realize that they can make a living for themselves by working hard and or doing something which is skill based, rather than just waiting for the money to come in and eat and enjoy and then wait again.
And just on the topic of skills, just in general, we have something very concerning. So in the UAE, guys, because there has been a very high influx of talent, what has essentially occurred is that starting salaries in companies, not only have they become more competitive to even obtain, but they have actually gone up, I believe. They have gone up and they have... They have declined by 0.7%.
Yeah, basically what is happening is that a lot of talented people, everyone is trying to come to the UAE.
Yeah.
Because, again, good infrastructure, safety on roads, great roads, actually. We were just talking about it with my producer. I'm trying to get my driving license. If I get a driving license, I'll most probably sleep on the UAE road because it's so easy. It's so comfortable to drive on these roads. They're very well made. The cars here, they're kept well. You have a yearly thing where you take your car, it's checked, so there's no problem. So if you're driving a Tesla on a UAE road, it's like you're just like traveling on air. There's no noise, no nothing. I remember the very first time I came here, one of my friends, he was like, okay, I'll tell you what 120 kph, like the speed feels like. And we sat in the car and he took us on a highway where obviously the speed limit was 120. So he went above 120 and I didn't feel a thing. It's impossible to do that in my country. So I was like, why am I not feeling? Just the push that you feel. Apart from that, I was like, it's so smooth. So yeah, everything is great in the UAE. So everyone wants to come here, obviously. And the salaries are great. Everything else is great.
And now there's more competition.
Yeah, so that is giving rise to a lot of competition. So if you want to hire someone, if a company wants to hire someone, they have, if they had one option, or 10 options, now they have 100,000 options. And everyone wants a piece of this economy right now, which is booming, to be honest. So yeah, that has created more competition. The good idea for companies is that they have brought the base salaries or the starting salaries down. So this was a report by Robert Half. It's a consultancy company for HR. So they published the 2025 UAE salary guide. The main categories or the main industries that they touched was finance, accounting, IT, technology, and HR. And to be honest, finance, accounting, IT, tech, especially tech with fintech growing, all these are the biggest pay givers, to be honest, in the industry. You go ask a person from finance, their salary starts from a very high point. So it's now seeing a downturn. It's going down. As you said, UAE, the starting salaries for professional
services. And companies
are
taking advantage of it. They're taking advantage because they're reducing starting salaries now.
To be honest, if I go in their shoes and think about it, if I am getting a good resource for a lesser amount, why won't I do it? Every company always is trying to cut its costs, right? Because the more costs they cut, the more profit will be there. And the more
That's
profit
true,
is there,
but,
they'll reinvest into the company.
But how will you
company.
Inspire loyalty?
Money is not the only thing that it is like it's the primary factor.
It's
Trust
the
me.
Thing though. If you
13 years in the working industry, money is the primary motivator. There are secondary things as well. Giving you an example, I don't know about here in the UAE, the banking CEOs. I will go and read about it right now. I realize I should. In Pakistan, the top 5-10 banks, the CEOs have a salary cap from the central bank. I guess it will be in place here as well. It's a very common thing among banking industry. So a salary cap means that you can't pay a CEO more than this amount, because then if you don't have a salary cap, if you're a bank, I am a bank, if I have a very great CEO, you'll just offer him more salary and take him or her. So they have, the central bank has a cap. So you can't pay more than that. So money-wise, every CEO is nearly earning the same. But then it comes to the secondary things. Car, house rent, driver, this, that. So all the perks that they receive over their salary, that attracts them to go to another bank.
Mm.
So this is how the point about loyalty, it's great, it's good. Money, obviously, give a good salary to someone, obviously they'll come and work for you and will give you like 70-80% of their loyalty. But how you treat them later in the office, the perks that you give them, timing wise,
yeah,
dressing wise, leniency wise, work from home wise, like there's 1 million things that you can count that also contribute to the loyalty of an employee.
Yeah, I agree with you.
If you're, for example, if I'm told to wear a suit, tie, everything, like a proper formal attire every day, but my job doesn't demand it. I don't have a customer facing or something job. I just sit in the office in front of a laptop for the whole day and I'm suited up like I'm going to my marriage. I would, at some point, I'll be like, why am I doing this? This doesn't contribute to my work, right? But if I am given the leeway that, okay, you can remove the tie, just dress properly, formally, I would love it, right?
But you know,
because
recently,
my job is desk-based. I don't face customers, I only write or something.
Yeah.
So these small things now, with your generation, especially Gen Z, and my generation as well, millennials, it matters a lot. They want not only quantity, like money-wise, they also want quality of work and quality of life through their work as well. What do you think?
Would you switch to a
place which tells you to wear formals every day and give you 5,000 more, or will you stay and...
See, look, I'm a bit biased on that because my style, it's a bit more preppy.
Oh, okay.
However, recently I saw this company and their employees were saying that they get given personal allowances to go buy corporate clothes.
Yeah.
Imagine.
So
I've never heard, I would be really excited about that.
A lot of people do that. In the media industry, what I've seen, the only example that comes to my mind is the media industry, because a lot of people who come on screen, they get a lot of budget only for their clothes. They get a salary, separate salary, but for everything else, their upkeep, their massages, parlors thing, their hair thing, if they don't have an in-house makeup room or makeup something, they get a whole budget every month for every day actually. They have a limit of every day you can use this. So they get everything done. So it depends on the industry as well, I guess. But the basic difference is customer facing roles or back door or like back room roles. So if you're in a back room role, then you're told to wear a suit every day, which isn't practical, because who are you going to show everything to? You're not presenting yourself. You're just doing work on the laptop. For an IT guy who's like, the basic work is like setting up infrastructures or like setting up the server room, a suit doesn't make sense. It's not practical. So he would hate a job where he has to wear a suit every day and go to the job and be like, oh, I'm changing wires and I'm wearing a tie and suit. So those small things, I think, now contribute to the loyalty of, it's not just the pay. It is the pay. Primary pay, but everything else also contributes. So in UAE, the good thing is that people are coming here, people want a job here, people want to set up a life here.
Yeah.
With so many visas opening up, everyone has some kind of a plan, visa plan also now. Before it was like only work visa or one or two visas. Now with the golden visa chances, you buy a property, you get a golden visa. You do this, you get a golden visa. There's blue visas, green visas for certain
specialties. You know,
Majid,
I do also hope that, you know, other cities in the Emirate, like Ajman, Ras Al Khaimah, that they also become more, that people move there instead of Dubai. Because the traffic is absolutely horrible. It's horrible now. It's something else. Because of the amount of people that have moved to Dubai, I hope that gets better.
Yeah, they will get better. Everything will get better, hopefully.
Yeah.
I'm not a very optimistic guy. I'm a very realistic guy. We were talking about that. But realistically speaking, everything eventually gets better.
Of course.
I always follow the mantra, this too shall pass. So if it's a good time, be humble, be kind to people and just go on. And if it's a bad time, just say, this too shall pass. Be humble, be kind.
Yeah.
Be thankful for whatever you have and then move on.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
And speaking of moving on, our next topic. So in Saudi Arabia, tourism has gone up, I believe the UN reported. Can you tell us what the percentage is, Majid?
A lot of big numbers in this report. So the kingdom achieved a significant milestone, ranking 12th globally in international tourist spending. So international tourist spending in the world, Saudi is top. In the top 15, I'll say 12th, And the tourists spent nearly $36 billion in the kingdom in 2023, the last year. I basically found this story on LinkedIn. I forgot the name of the guy, but he's the CEO of Saudi Holding Company. So he presented all these numbers, and then I found the UN World Tourism Organization report, and yeah, obviously checked. And this, yeah, big numbers coming in. We talked about Saudi Arabia basically reaching their 2030 Saudi Vision targets sooner than 2030. They achieved it in this first half of 2024. So they were trying to get like 200 and something million people to the kingdom. And this included obviously Umrah and Hajj as well. It's not like excluding all those numbers. It includes religious tourism as well. So they've already achieved the target, and these numbers now, they show that they're doing good.
Yeah, they are.
They're very on track for Saudi Vision.
And these numbers, they're only going to go up. Like recently, we've seen that the Neom Island project was launched, and it's worth $1.5 trillion. So people are just going to continue going to Saudi Arabia. Not only is it, you know, it's tourism sector. It's so beautiful because now they've added all of these leisurely activities. You know, there's also Hajj in Saudi Arabia. So just overall, Saudi Arabia is becoming a place that it fits the needs of everybody. If you know, if you're looking for what's it called? If you're looking for a religious trip, that's where you can go. If you're looking for leisurely activities, cultural activities, that's where you can go. And it's absolutely revolutionary because not so long ago, I believe people couldn't go to cinemas.
Yeah.
So
they
now,
opened cinemas in like 2018 or 2019. And you look at the Saudi blockbuster numbers, they're crazy. People love it. So yeah, I also talked about that report. Basic idea was that ticket prices are stable, but the results of ticket sales, like the sales of tickets, they're going up every quarter. What I was seeing is that they were at the 27th rank in 2019 before COVID struck, obviously, and now they're at the 12th rank. So it's a 15 rank jump for Saudi Arabia. And Neom project you talked about, Sindala recently opened. That is like the first physical location of the Neom project. Sindala, it's a very, in very easy words, it's a lot of islands that will open, but the first island destination of Sindala has opened. It's the technical word is archipelago. When you have a lot of islands, it's called an archipelago. So one of them is opened. Two hotel resorts are already open there. There's a golf course. There's a lot of stuff. They're soon going to open it for public. They took a select number of people there, and they posted stories and pictures and whatnot. Made us jealous. So yeah, those guys went, they saw, and they are like, oh, it's a good place. So soon you will be able to go to Sindala, the very first Neom project which has a physical opening now. The Lion is there, Trojan is there, Mukab is there, which will have new Murabba. There's so many projects happening. So all that is contributing to the tourism increasing in Saudi Arabia. Just to give you a perspective of what Saudi is doing good, Saudi Arabia leads G20 countries in terms of visitor numbers. So G20 countries, Saudi Arabia is at the top with 73% increase in international arrivals and a 207% rise in global tourism revenue between January and July 24, so this year, so compared to 2019. So yeah, international tourism is booming. Yeah. People are going to Saudi Arabia.
And
they love whatever is happening there.
Just recently, Will Ahmed, the founder of Whoops, he visited it and he had amazing things to say about it. And he said that for Saudi Arabia, this is just the beginning. And the fact that with all of these great big projects, this is just the beginning. Majid, I truly cannot predict how much further they will evolve. I really can't predict it. It's so unpredictable because already what's going on right now, what we're seeing, it's great. It's absolutely great.
So my producer is telling me we only have 10 seconds to end the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for watching, everyone. If you dropped in halfway, we stream everything live on all of our platforms. If you're somebody who likes to read, we also have the Smashy newsletter for you. You can go on Smashy Business on Instagram. Please check it out. And thank you so much. Tune in for tomorrow.